Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Leaf Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about peace. We'll try to understand how peace between countries begins with peace between people. We'd like to see how these things are interrelated. Be with us. Nitza, please.
Yeah,
on our previous show, we said that we have to meet certain rules, laws, principles in order to reach peace or connection between nations. There is equality and mutuality and many other principles that we need in order to achieve true peace between countries. And also, you mentioned on our previous show that it's not enough to just make peace between state leaders, but that there's really a process where two nations have to become integrated. And the question actually is whether, in order to achieve a connection between two nations, does there first of all have to be a good and correct connection within the nation before connecting with or to another nation? Politicians, they can control the army and their treasury, but that's that. And therefore, when they sign an agreement, then what they commit to is that their army won't attack the other army, and that will also not use our money in order to harm the other side. This is what a leader has in his hands. But the meaning of peace is that the nations will come closer and will integrate with one another, that they'll become closer, even up to the point of being like a family. And their integration means canceling their borders, canceling what's mine is mine and yours is yours, and everything. Therefore, what has to precede such agreements, and I'm sure that there will be such agreements in the future because otherwise we will not be able to survive, what has to precede such agreements is education, an educational system. It's impossible that one country will agree to signing a peace agreement, if it really is a peace agreement, with another country, unless the nations are ready for it. And therefore, first of all, there has to be an ongoing educational process of many years. And only then do you sign. Meaning, in the meantime, we sign a ceasefire agreement. Then, a year later, after the ceasefire agreement, after a year, we have to sign an agreement that unites the universities, that unites schools, different such things, and to gradually permeate each other, integrate with one another. And of course, the closest thing is to cancel the borders and the financial systems and to make it all as one. And the hardest thing is to unite the nations, to really unite them into one nation. That here we really try to convince them to get married to each other, intermingle, integrate in different ways. Instead of both nations having their own holidays, we have new collective common holidays, and so on. Meaning, here we're truly creating a psychological revolution, cultural revolution, religious revolution, express them how families behave, expressed in politics. Really, in everything, we have to really build things from scratch. We have to build a new kind of behavior. This is education for peace, actually. Yeah? And this demands a lot of investment and understanding of what do we do and in what stages, and especially the understanding of what do we actually want to achieve. Meaning, it's not the external actions that we make, but suppose you said, let's unite universities, schools. What's really the goal? What do we want to achieve? We want to achieve, to create a single nation, to create some kind of merger, such an integration that they will become one nation. You talked about different aspects, religious aspects, other aspects. What happens with the uniqueness that each nation brings? Their culture, their traditions, maybe they even have a different religion. We tried to do it here in Israel, this kind of integration and closeness, and even though that there is still much to do, but there are big changes nonetheless compared to how it was. I'm here for 45 years now, here in Israel. And I see how really it changed, how everything really changed. Meaning, yes, we have created a common culture, obviously a common language, many common experiences that we already have as a result of becoming one nation. And it's true that there's a certain uniqueness that disappears over time because things change. Yeah, that generation that came from the diaspora is gradually disappearing, meaning that people no longer live here the way they used to live in the diaspora, in Yemen, in Germany, in Morocco, and other places. Everyone became more integrated. Actually, it was done very well in the army. So, in terms of mixing with each other, here I don't see a problem. This will hopefully go and grow. But in terms of the connection between people, that in the past it used to matter whether he's Moroccan or Greek or he's an Ashkenazi Jew and so on. And today it's barely important or non-important at all. But still, I can't stand the other person. Why? If previously it was clear to me why I can't stand the other person, he comes from a different culture with different habits and so on, I don't like their food, even their accent, and so on and so forth. I remember this how I felt, that it's different. And of course today it's something that you no longer feel because it's already the second, third, and so on generation. Everyone went to the same schools, experienced the same culture. But what remained is that particular hatred between people. And this is something that doesn't go away. And it's based on what? On our ego, very simple. I can't stand the other. Why? Simply can't. That's called unfounded hatred. In the past, it wasn't unfounded, meaning we knew why. Yeah, we knew why we hate the other, and this is something that we took care of. But today, we don't know how to take care of this, how to deal with it. And for this, we need the wisdom of Kabbalah. Going back to what we started our discussion with, you said that in order to create true peace between two nations, two countries, first of all, each of the countries has to go through a long and deep educational process of several years that will explain to every person in that country the process of integration and connection that we're soon going to make with the other country, with the other nation. So, is there a certain level of understanding that each person has to reach in the one country and the other country, which is a precondition in order for us to be able to start coming closer. Of course, what's the minimum level for a citizen in country A and in country B that they have to reach, that they have to develop to in order to start talking about connection between the nations? First of all, it's necessary to explain to both nations where are we headed, what do we gain and benefit as a result, and maybe what are we losing as a result? What are we headed towards? We have to make a referendum in both countries and see what are the responses. We have to put together a serious questionnaire about what do you want, what don't you want, what are you afraid of, why do you hate, what can bring you closer, and so on and so forth. There has to be very serious psychological work here. This questionnaire examined my attitude or our attitude as citizens toward the other country, toward the citizens of the other country. Okay, in this process, is there a need? Suppose Nitza and I were the citizens of country A, and you and someone else are the citizens of country B, and between us there's a border and different kinds of disputes. Now, I want to leave the people of the other country aside and just to focus on myself and Nitza. The leaders of our country want to strike a peace deal with you, with your country. Do we here in our country, between us, have to go through some kind of an initial process in order to learn how to treat each other in our country so that afterwards both of us together will be able to relate correctly to the people in your country? Of course. So what do we have to learn? What do we have to do before we make a peace agreement with the other country? You mean even before the peace agreement? Right. I suppose that in our country too we have 1,000 different disputes, meaning it's an inner peace process before we create a peace process with another country. Is this a precondition or isn't it? Why isn't it? No, I'm asking. So this will be something that you'll find out on the referendum. Every time you have to make a referendum, and you have to make the referendum like a polygraph test. Did you ever take a polygraph test? No, but I saw other people take it. Okay, a polygraph is built in such a way that you ask me a few questions, you measure my blood pressure and a few other parameters, and you see whether I'm lying or not. And with the help of several questions and the way I respond to each and every question, you already understand what do I really think about the questions you asked, along with other questions that were just asked in order to confuse me or to scrutinize different other things, unimportant matters. So in short, you see what's going on in my mind. And this is very serious psychological work. There are plenty of books about it. I talk to people that this is what they do for a living. They have tons of books about it, about how is it possible to read another person's mind. Eventually, this is what it is. And a person himself, he doesn't know. And suppose he himself wants to know. If you ask me about something that I want to hide, then okay, I understand. What am I being asked and what do I want to hide? And then they can only see how my internality and externality are unbalanced, are in contradiction. But if I myself don't know, suppose you ask me about another nation, something that I never asked myself. So you have to build such mechanisms in the referendum that will allow you to know how does the nation really feel inside. These are things that most probably they have no idea about. And then you'll be able to find out what kind of problems they have to deal with in order to connect with the other nation. A person who's ready for a peace process, what kind of feelings does he have? What kind of insights does he have? What makes him ripe? Just one thing, that he understands that peace is the only solution for a good future, and that he sees no other solution because there's no choice. Because there's no choice, that's the best thing. I even hate you, I don't like you, I understand it, I feel it, but I have no choice. Meaning, there's the revelation of evil, and along with it, you discover that it's necessary. That's the best thing. It's the truth. If now it's not clear yet that I hate you, then it'll become clear later. So it means that we still have a long way. So were I to ask one central question in this referendum, what's important for me to know? Is there something more important than reaching complete wholeness and peace with the other nation? That's a good question, because then I can give plenty of excuses why not. These are just excuses. Okay, everything we said now about agreements between two countries doesn't necessarily apply to Israel. We talked about countries in general. Are there any additional laws when we're talking about peace between Israel and another country? I didn't understand the question, sorry. Now, in general, our discussion was about peace between countries. Not necessarily the state of Israel and some other country, but it could be other countries, France and England, for example. But now, I want to focus this part of our talk on whether there are differences or additional principles that we have to be familiar with. We, meaning Israel, in order to establish a good and healthy peace agreement with a country that we don't have peace with. We need for them to understand that they have no choice, and we have to understand that we have no choice. So much so that it's not that we have no choice that we can't destroy each other, but that even though that we can destroy each other, but according to the higher or upper laws of nature, we have to have such a peace agreement between us, that we will connect with one another without any conditions or borders, and this will actually be the true correction. And we can't escape this correction. One way or another, it'll happen. Only that we'll have to pay for it dearly for many generations with blood and destruction and so on. So the entire process that all of mankind is going through is just to understand that there's no other way but peace. Of course. And that any other way will only lead us to suffering, pain. Yes, but to learn this, we have to go through thousands of years and so on. Now, it's interesting because on the one hand, we all have an aspiration for peace. No, not at all. Your aspiration is to succeed, to control, to benefit. So this is my true aspiration, that even if I make a peace agreement, then it's because it's beneficial for me. Beneficial because, I don't know, for whatever reason. So if I understand correctly, there's a certain process where all of us together have to reach a point that you also asked about in the referendum, of whether there are any other solutions or why shouldn't we have a peace deal. Meaning, if we all understand that a peace agreement is the only way to live a good life, to create a better future, a safe future, or to finish with life altogether, so much so, where we can really see it coming, that we're going to destroy our planet with all the heat and cold waves and the climate altogether and tsunamis and hurricanes and so on, that we're finishing off the entire monetary system, our economy, international trade, everything there is, that we're destroying our families and children and everything, that we really reach such hate that I see my haters even inside my house. Outside of my house, it's frightening to go out there altogether and so on. If I see that this is where things are headed, then this is from the bad side of things. Now, I also have to learn from this, from the recognition of evil, also about the good side of things. Is this truly the only solution? And then, even though that I see that I'm suffering and probably I have no choice, but it pushes me to study the laws of nature, and then, from the laws of nature, I see that it's not a matter of having no choice, but that it's the best possible, most exalted thing. And then I turn to it, not because I have no choice, but even if you give me anything else, I don't want it. But connection, peace, and love between everyone. What are the laws of nature that you have to study? The general integral laws of nature, that the whole of nature is an integral system, and that we're not in conflict with one another, but that we're all mutually connected. In nature, there are endless conflicts. This is how it seems to us, because anyone who blames does it because of his own flaws. But if we study nature, we see that there's no cruelty in nature that's controlled by the upper force of love. I don't understand. We see that all the laws of nature supplement, complete each other, creating a single system. And in this system, everything exists in connection, mutuality. This is one thing. And another thing that we see is that the still, the vegetative, and the animate, they live by the laws of nature, and even if they eat each other, no one does it out of cruelty. They act the way they do because this is how they were created. The food chain. Yeah, and that's it. Besides man, were a man to also use only what he really needs, then we would all be on the same level as animals. Everyone eats only what they need, meaning whatever a person needs and no more. Right, but that's not how reality is. It isn't. Not on the political level, international level, personal level, nowhere. I need $100 a month. Everything else I make, I spread. It doesn't work that way. Of course it doesn't. But I'm willing to leave you without two dimes to rub together. Obviously. So here what we need is integral education. For us to learn from nature and understand how are we supposed to exist, we, human beings, how are we supposed to live and exist in our world to become like the global integral nature, where everyone takes only what they need. Yeah. And how will that contribute to peace? Then there will be peace between everyone. What do we need war for? In order to control each other. But God forbid, I don't want that. To eat more, don't eat it. More clothes, don't eat it. You don't need this, more of that. Everyone's really content. Okay, now, disputes between countries, wars between countries, are they somewhat similar to conflicts between citizens of the same country? They go bigger, so it works on a different level, on a larger scale. More powerfully. A country where the citizens are disputed, there are different denominations and so on, and they're disputed. Can they make peace with another country if they're not at peace within the country? No, you could do it in parallel somehow, but because otherwise I can't understand what peace is then. Please explain. In order to understand what peace is and what kind of peace am I going to establish with another country, then first of all, I have to make domestic peace for me to know what to demand of the other, what do we have to decide on between us, what kind of connections should we have, on what levels, between families, children, students, treasury, army, with trade and industry and all that. I have to know how to arrange it in my country so that it will be to the benefit of every citizen, and then I'll be able to understand what this connection, peace, with another country mean. and emotionally wise. Until now, we talked about the social systems that we have to build that will help us balance out the relationships between people of the same country. Now, what kind of an emotional level or degree do we have to reach, Nitza and I, in order to be able to connect with people from your country? You already learned how to do it. What? You already learned how to build a good, nice, open relationship with another person. With a person from my country? Maybe not. If not, then you're not ready for peace with another country. Of course, you'll fail. So what's the minimum that we have to learn between us before we turn to another country to make peace? The minimum is to be connected in some kind of work groups in which each cancels his own ego toward the others in so-called tens. And this is how you learn. How can you then connect to others? You also have what to offer to someone else. Do what we do, and then let's unite. Let's come together. What leads to war is actually the ego. So what leads to peace? The same ego. Same ego. That we want to rise above. Our time's almost up. You said that a person, first of all, has to understand what peace is before realizing it. Peace is an entire comprehensive system called Adam, literally meaning man in Hebrew, where we're all so integrated with one another that we feel ourselves like cells in the same body. And what do we get out of all of this? We experience the life of this entire body called Adam, literally meaning man in Hebrew, this general soul and the vital force in it called the upper force. And does it change a person's day-to-day life? It's far beyond that. You see from one end of the world to the other. You break through the boundaries of time, space, motion. You feel wholeness and eternity, completion. You no longer live in this world. You're already in dimensions that are beyond any limitations. And every country can reach this? Has to. It's not that it can, but it has to. Every country and every person. And we will get there. This is something that we can't escape. Is there peace at the end of the way? There is. But along the way, let's try to also get there peacefully. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.